Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And we're back doing our thing here on the KNC Masterpiece. 7 to 11 tonight, so stick with us throughout the entire evening. Tell all of your friends, hey, our favorite show is on right now. So we have to sit around the warm glow of a radio and enjoy our evening. Okay. The thing we're going to start off with tonight, who should have the biggest game for the Cowboys? If you're a Cowboys coach, if you're running this team this weekend, do you want the Cowboys to go out there and do business as usual? Do you want them to go out there and say, hey, we're going to run the ball early, we're gonna zip it around just a little bit, and you know, we're going to try and get all the same guys, all the same stats, and we're going to move on? Or do you say, you know what, we have some things that we need to work on, and we're going to work on a couple of those things against a really bad team? You know what? We want Blake Jarwin to get some more actual real game reps against this bad team because we know we can beat them. Or do you say, you know what? Let's just do exactly what we always do and get out of, and get done with Miami as quickly as possible. 877-881-1053.
I kind of want them to do exactly what they've done, but I want a different person to emerge. The person who should have the biggest game on Sunday is DeMarcus Lawrence. Now, this is kind of a tough one because it fits in your category of, like, this is somebody that we frequently lean on. However, the results for pretty much the defensive line and getting consistent pressure as a whole hasn't been there thus far. So I would really like to see him explode in this game to the tune of 2.5 to 3 sacks. Like that, he sent out the thing, you know, ooh, looking at that Jets game, but this is the game where if we can't get pressure going here, then I'll start to be like, I still think we'll win by a lot, but then I would start to be somewhat concerned. And so I'm saying tank. This is the one where I want him to really open it up and destroy some chumps.
I can totally see Jarwin going off this game, mainly because of what the Ravens kind of showed when they played the Dolphins, which was they can't cover a tight end whatsoever. And you know the Patriots do what they do with their tight ends.
Mm-hmm.
So you see that and you realize that, yes, there's going to be plenty of opportunity for that.
And you also saw in that game Antonio Brown was in the slot a lot.
Yes.
So down the seam was where Antonio Brown did most of his work.
So I think that's something you're going to see. As far as getting pressure on the quarterback, with them, Rosen is, right, they have announced.
Yes.
So Rosen being back there, he's not going to get the ball away as fast as if it was Fitzmagic back there. So you do have an opportunity for sacks. I want to see, personally, I want to see one of those Zeke games that blows me away. I want to see one of those Zeke games to where it's not like a quiet 115 yards. I want to see one of those games where you know now Zeke is totally back. The offensive line is kicking ass. We know they can do it. But I want to see one of those games to where you just can't stop 21.
Where you have a couple of maybe 3 or 4 different 20-plus yard runs from him, and you're just like, how? That's exactly what we wanted to see. That's
because,
exactly how he pads his numbers.
Because use that to set up in the future for even better on that play action pass.
Yeah,
I want people to be afraid.
That's the thing that we're starting to see is less carries already for Zeke and more yards. They're using him more efficiently, and it's passes setting up the run. And you know what? You can maybe have bigger strikes from Zeke without having to run him first and second down. You know, you might be able to have big home run hits if this passing game continues to do that, but the threat of the play action absolutely does open things up for everybody on the field, and that's why they're doing it the way they're doing it right now. I'm personally on the let's work on the Blake Jarwin connection a little bit more. You saw it in New York. You know, when 2 years ago, or last year, at the end of the season, they said, hey, Blake Jarwin's going to be open, so let's work on getting him those opportunities, because guess what that's going to do? Just like you said, Colby, if that's setting up, if play action is setting up the pass, if the pass is setting up the run,
mm-hmm.
and you're hitting Blake Jarwin, and you're hitting him in the seams, Amari Cooper is going to become more open. Some of these other guys are going to become more open as well.
This one kind of works in cooperation depending on how quickly the game were to get out of hand. From the 817, pad those MVP stats, maybe for Dak. And then from the 214, Cooper Rush. Man, this should be a game where I'm going to admit I'm going to be disappointed if Dak is in there past the first drive of the third quarter. Like, in my mind, the way it plays out is they score a touchdown in the first drive of the third quarter to make it, like, 38-3. And then they're like, all right, Cooper Rush, time for you to come in here and, like, do your thing. And so I think Cooper Rush is an interesting one. Like, that's not who I would have guessed is, like, watch out, that kid's going to take over. But I kind of think that makes sense.
Tony Pollard, you know,
yes.
Like if you're really going to go. My plan, my goal, what I really want to happen is – for by the end of the first drive in the third quarter, we're done. All right, we go out there, put our foot down in the first half, and then in the second half, come out one more time and say, yeah, we did it again. We can do this all day if we have to, but do we have to prove that we can, or can we just say this is it? We're good for the rest of the day, and then, as you said, Kevin, sit on the defense for the rest of the day. Just let Tank and let those guys get after it. And say, okay, Tristan Hill, now you get your reps in. Now you can show us what you're actually made of here. And I do have a big concern, and maybe it's just media, but you know how I didn't feel that Dak or a bunch of these guys would allow their teammates to settle back. Mm-hmm. This, however, because of the way everybody's been talking this week, because it's just kind of been a joke. And when you look at what Miami's put out on the field, it's just kind of been a joke. I'm not saying it's a trap game by any means, but it could be uglier than it should be. And that's concerning to me because I don't want this team to take them as a joke. I want them to take themselves seriously. And Jason Garrett talks about that all the time, right? Oh, we gotta focus on ourselves. We gotta focus on what we do. If they come out flat for a couple of quarters and they aren't dominating this team, then they weren't focusing on themselves this week.
And I understand the logic of focusing on yourself because it should pay off, especially in a game like this. But I also think it's impossible to completely ignore what's happening in the world. Like, these people are in the NFL. You got to think there's, like, at least a decent shot that they follow the NFL. And they're aware that the Dolphins have been outscored by 92 points in the first two games. So, yes, I hope it doesn't come to that, but I will be fascinated to see if, like, by halftime they score right before halftime to make it 17-7, and you're like, oh, we weren't ready for this thing at all. Like, because even a 10-point lead at halftime will lead me to believe that this team was not ready to put the boots to the Dolphins. Because, by the way, that spread is now up to 23. And you might be thinking, well, that's insane. Well, keep in mind, the closest game the Dolphins have had so far is 43 points. They lost by 49, and then they lost by 43. This is a terrible team that could rival the expansion Bucks in terms of one of the worst you've ever seen.
No, I mean, I hear everything that you're saying, and the worry could be there. I don't think this team will do that because they do have to watch the game film. And if you take a look at it, it's not like the Dolphins didn't show up at all. They were trying. They were out there actually running plays. It wasn't like they didn't know how to run plays. It's just the other team was better at every single turn. It wasn't like they didn't just, oh, you know what we're going to do? Let's just we're going to throw it to their guys now for the rest of the game. No, there was plays that were made by the offense and the defense on the Dolphins that, you know, they did do stuff. They just didn't do a lot of stuff because they kept getting their ass beat. So you need to make sure you're the one that's doing the beating, right? You need to make sure you're the one that's out there and not let any of those plays get you. I think everything will be just fine.
From the 817, how will Taco do? He's going up against Tyron, so probably not very well at all. Because, I mean, he's going up against Tyron.
Is he playing?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like they're picking him up. And, you know, did they pick him up to try and get intel? He wasn't paying attention.
I think
what does he know?
He didn't know a thing.
They picked him up to further Tank, is my theory. They're like, hey, you seem as though you don't care when the game's going on, so we would like to go ahead and pick you up to further the not care attitude of this team.
877-881-1053. What is your game plan for the Cowboys on Sunday against the Dolphins? Who do you need? Who do you have to see have a big game? And you know what? Somebody asked if they should start Jarwin over Sutton on Sunday for their flex position. I might even be interested in starting Cobb. Like I feel like Cobb in that area is going to do a lot of work very early on and probably going to get you a touchdown or two because of where he's going to be lining up and how bad the Dolphins are in those spots.
I'm surprised to hear you say that because for just a minute I thought you were going to tell me that you would start Blake Jarwin over all people because you're pretty hyped up about it. Are you about to do that?
I do feel like I need to go pick up Blake Jarwin in a fantasy league and just go ahead and start him. Like I'm feeling very confident that he's probably going to be the one that plays the most in the game. You know, like, and somebody just pointed out, hey, listen, Tom Brady played the entire game. Why shouldn't Dak? And that's another question you really have to consider. At what point do you start taking guys off the field? Is it when your lead is big enough?
Yes.
Or when do you say, you know what, we're going to do what the Patriots do. We're going to go out there and play every down, every play. No.
If your lead gets to 28 points or higher in the second half, I want them out. I do, and I understand that's what the Patriots did, and like rock on for them. I want him out of the game. I want several of our players out of the game at that point.
And is that the way Jason Garrett is preparing his team this week? Is Jason Garrett preparing them of, hey, look, we want to go out there and crush them? Or is he preparing his team? Because that's the way I would be doing it. I want to crush a superiorly inferior opponent. They are the going to tank at a level that is beyond anything we've seen in a long time. I don't want to leave any doubt. I don't want any points on the scoreboard. I don't want anything. I want y'all to go out there and crush them. And is that the kind of mindset that this team needs to have in order to become the team that is, look, whenever we see blood in the water, we bike, we strike.
I think I need to go back and examine the Jacksonville game a little bit more to give you a better answer to that because it was like 42-3, mm-hmm. and I don't feel like I had any question that, like, not only did they put the game out of reach, that they were there to put the game out of reach. So I would have to go back and examine the second half playing patterns of that to give you a better answer.
Because each week's different. Each team, sure. Each opponent is going to give you something different until you get to a point where planning for yourself is all that matters, right? Look, we're going to go out there, we're going to execute all these things, and it's not going to matter who's up against us because they can't stop us. Each opponent has a little bit something that's going to be different, so you have to have this, okay, do we do this, do we do that? But I think when every situation comes, you have to go in with the mindset of crush, defeat, and the machine keeps moving.
Can I tell you that
that's when you're a machine, and I don't know, is this Cowboys team a machine yet?
See, that's a good question, and I have to admit, like, as a Cowboys fan, I might not have that proper crush mindset because some people were talking to me about getting lunch on Sunday at 11:30, and I said, sure. And then I was like, oh, yeah, the game. So, like, that's the thing is I hope the I mean, this is why I do this. I'm not a professional athlete.
Okay.
Because, like, I have already counted this as a victory. We are already 3-0, and there is nothing anybody can say to change my mind about that. And that would be a mindset that, like, hopefully the Cowboys don't adopt because I could see how that would be disastrous. But I feel like a lot of fans have that mindset because what's the number one thing that you have seen and that I have seen on here? It's not a player. It's people saying, I just hope everybody stays healthy. So, like, I feel like a lot of Cowboys fans are just like, it's done. We've already won the game.
You know what? And I hear that. I hear that because I thought of that when I said, oh, we got the Dolphins next week. I said, this is going to be a fun game to watch. That came out of my mouth. Have we gotten past the fact that these are the Cowboys? Have we moved past what we thought of the old Cowboys just after two games? Because a Jason Garrett coach team goes into when having everything going right for it. That's when everything falls apart.
Yeah.
This is when it happens.
Because he takes his foot off?
Yes. Because he plays.
He gets conservative?
Yes. And because we've seen two blowout wins, we're like, yeah, that can't happen. That can't happen. All it took was two wins to convince us that this system has changed so much that it's not going to be down to a cloud of dust and a field goal and some inferior team will beat this team.
Yeah, no, I can totally see a mindset of Garrett saying, all right, let's go establish the run in this game. Let the clock run out quickly. You know, because what happens, the clock starts to run a little faster, unless you're making completions in the middle of the field. Right. But that's the other thing. The clock starts to work its way down. Let's go ahead and get out of here. If we win 21-0, that's a perfect game for me, as long as we all just get off the field. But that's when things can go wrong.
Yes.
From the 214, Kevin needs better friends. And they put Kevin in quotes. And that's hilarious to me.
Hold on, if you follow us on Facebook, that's hilarious. That is actually my name.
No, well, there's a story on Facebook regarding something you posted on the KNC Masterpiece page. And it's because it says agreement in quotes. And I don't understand why it says that. But yeah, go check it out on the KNC Masterpiece page.
Yes, big news about the show if you go look that up. Yeah. Which apparently I need to read closer.
And then on number two on there is they said this is a total trap game. Because the Dolphins are so bad, I don't believe it's a trap to lose. I do believe it's a trap to get you out of the mindset of crush. And that's what I want this team thinking. We are as good as the Patriots. We need to think like the Patriots. We need to think in a mindset of we're tougher than everybody, we're working harder than everybody, we're putting in everything that it takes to close people out in the fourth quarter, if not the third quarter. And that's. But you're right, Colby. It's only been two games, and I think this team is capable of that.
Right.
I think they are capable of going into Sunday's game and having Blake Jarwin be the number one receiver for the day.
It's only been two games, and I guess it works on the other side too, because we look at this linebacking core like it needs to step up. We know this linebacking core is talented, but does everybody not feel like they need to see more out of LVE and Jalen and the guys? And at the linebacker position, because they haven't looked really, really well.
I'd love to see some turnovers. I mean, you have a quarterback back there that is not going to be protected very well, and he likes to turn it over when that happens.
And I think that's the biggest thing for me. It's still not necessarily just the Cowboys as much as it is the Dolphins are so bad. They've scored 10 points in two games, and they're switching to a quarterback who was worse in the preseason. You know, like, so theoretically, maybe that'll light something up in them, but theoretically, you're switching to a worse quarterback from an offense that's averaging 5 points a game. I think it's more to do with the Dolphins than anything. Even though, like, I very much appreciate that I think this Cowboys team is really, really good, I just think the Dolphins are so bad that I'm like, whoever.
Oh, Kevin, come on.
Hey, I can have that mindset. They just need to not have that mindset.
And I think somebody said it right. I don't think Chris and Kellen are going to allow the players to mail it in.
Okay.
There you go. All right. It's up to you guys.
But Garrett, they're like,
whatever.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, have we been ignoring a glaring hole in the Cowboys scouting department? Talk about it next right here on The Fan.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Are we all ignoring a glaring hole that the Cowboys front office may have when it comes to a very certain position? 877-881-1053. Now, I walked in to about midway through the conversation on this yesterday between Kevin and Reggie, but I understood exactly where you guys were going with it. We were talking about Taco. We're talking about the rest of the defensive line and the Cowboys' failure at being able to find, deliver, and groom and grow defensive linemen. And especially, Kevin, I want you to take a look. That defensive end position has been very tough to come by for this team.
Yeah, and like that's one thing I want to go ahead before we get any texts about this part in particular. Just because you fail at one thing doesn't mean we're calling you a failure. Like, I don't think anybody here is saying the Cowboys scouting department is full of failures.
Oh, they've crushed. They've hit very well, man.
But when it comes to defensive line picks, I think there has been a lot to be desired, and that's something that you can go back to last year's playoff game and say, that's what cost you from going to potentially the Super Bowl. I mean, because the team you lost to went to the Super Bowl.
Right.
Because the team that you lose to frequently ends up going to the Super Bowl in the Cowboys' case. And so I think you can look directly at defensive line and say, well, that's why we didn't go to the Super Bowl.
I guess the biggest question that we have to decipher here is who is the biggest fault whenever it comes to planning and finding out who these defensive linemen are. Who's at fault the most? And Reggie, I do believe that you said that it's on the GM. It's on Steven and Jerry. 877-881-1053. Now, I have a timeline to work with here. I have some names to throw out. And Kevin, I'd love to for us to kind of go through this real quick. We're going to go back from now all the way back to 14, and then we can go back further if we need to. But last year, Tristan Hill, bust or good?
Bust.
Bust right now.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he hasn't even got on the field. And I know people are like, it's too early. Fair enough. But this is the information that we have thus far.
Joe Jackson and Jalen Jilks.
I mean, bust.
All right. Dorrance Armstrong in 2018.
Yeah, I'd be inclined to.
I'm excited about what he can do. Out. That's the only one they drafted 2 years ago. All right. Taco Charlton.
Bust.
I mean, we did a whole segment yesterday about, is he the biggest first round bust ever? Mm-hmm. And the consensus was, at the worst, he's in the top three.
All right. Then you had Jordan Carroll and Joe Ivy. Those were your defensive tackles that you drafted in the seventh round. I mean, what do you really expect out of a seventh round pick?
Fair enough.
All right. Then you're going to roll down. You're going to see Malik Collins and Charles Tapper. Malik Collins is in a contract year. You might see his best season. He's good, often injured. But he's good. He gets pressure, but he's often injured. You can't rely on him. And Charles Tapper had a back situation that did they know about it when they drafted him?
I thought they did.
It's weird there. But I would say that they missed on one and a half.
I'm going to go ahead and argue that they missed on both of them so far.
Okay.
Like, we keep waiting for something amazing from Malik Collins. And I'm not saying like he's just not a good player, but I keep hearing all of these fantabulous things are going to happen for him any day now. And here we are still sitting here waiting for him to kind of do something that's more than just like, I could find anybody. Like right now, I feel like you could find just about anybody to do what Malik Collins does.
I wouldn't consider him a bust, though.
Okay.
He's a starter.
Yeah, he's a starter, so he's not a bust.
So, yeah, I mean, he's starting for a defense.
Should he be?
Man, I don't know. If you're going to give me Vince Wilfork, then I'm going to take Vince Wilfork, Kevin.
Okay.
Of course, but that's a first-round pick.
Okay.
Ryan Russell in 2015, ooh, that was a fifth-round pick. Nothing. You got nothing out of him. Then you move down to 2014, and that's the last year. That's the first year that it was Will McClay's thing.
Well, you skipped Randy Gregory in 15.
Okay. Then your thoughts? Do they miss him too?
I mean, he doesn't play for you very often.
And sorry, they had him listed as an outside linebacker in the draft. The DeMarcus Lawrence in 2014 and Ben Gardner and Ken Bishop.
Oh, yes, I remember.
Now, DeMarcus Lawrence in the second round, they traded up to get him because they knew he wouldn't fall to where they were going to be. And so they moved up, and there was always the conflict of Kevin saying, look, they traded up to get him. He should be better than this. And he's been good. He's been great, you know, and he just got a big-time contract.
The thing that's complicated about this, and I don't want to drive everybody insane, but clearly I'm well aware that that's what's going to happen. In terms of value for a draft pick, DeMarcus Lawrence's value was fine. But like by the time he got to be good, you had to pay him. And that's one of the issues that you run into with draft pick value. Because the whole key of like, look, don't get me wrong, I'm super glad that they drafted DeMarcus Lawrence, and I'm glad he's on the team now. I very, very much am. But one of the keys about the draft is you want to get that cheap talent in place. That's the key. And so he did a big bag of nothing, more or less, for 2.5 of his first 3 years. And that's disappointing from a second-round pick. Did it take off after that? Well, hell yeah, and that's why I'm really glad that we have him. But I just always look back and wish that, like, he would have been better before, like, for longer before we had to pay him all the money, mm-hmm. and before like the last year or two, like what about years 1, 2, and 3? But that's definitely a hit.
And you can keep going back. The Cowboys didn't take a defensive lineman in the 2013 draft. They got Tyrone Crawford in the 12 draft. They got
what round was he drafted in?
He was drafted in the 3rd round.
Okay.
They had a 1st-round pick. They got Mo Claiborne, traded their 2nd, I do believe, to go move up to go get him, and then they got Tyrone Crawford in the 3rd round. And I think Kevin, you remember my scouting report on him. As long as nobody's in front of him, he can get to the quarterback. Well, he's grown since then. And he's gotten better at getting there.
And from the 214, Lawrence was suspended and injured. Not a fair argument. Of course it is. Like, the suspension was his own fault. And injury, like, it doesn't matter. If you're not productive, you're not productive. We talked about this last year when we had an NFL player on, and then we're talking about the idea of Travis Frederick. And he's like, look, man, if somebody can't go in the locker room, you almost adopt this mentality of, like, at least for whatever term, you're dead to us. Like, I'm not saying it's Tank's fault that he got hurt, but at the same time, that doesn't change the fact that he wasn't productive for some of those times. I understand there were mitigating factors, but that makes no difference in terms of the salary cap. That's all I'm trying to say. For those 3 years, you got disappointing production, in my view, out of a 2nd-round pick.
And okay. The real problem there isn't like in the individual. It's that when you stack all of these guys together, like they do have some instances in which the evaluation does work out, I think you can argue. However, like you stack a lot of guys who end up not being available for you, and it all works out to a net what? Because I'm not sure if it's a net positive, particularly also when you consider that this isn't a team that's going to go out and get a free agent D lineman, it doesn't seem.
Yes.
Yeah, no, that's not something that they seem interested in that's going to be expensive for them. They'll take a cheap guy. They'll take those Covingtons. They'll add those to the mix, but they're not going to go spend a lot of money. Now, the defensive line coach since 2013 and defensive coordinator / defensive line coach has been Rod Marinelli.
Yep.
So if you're saying the pair of Rod Marinelli and Will McClay can't find elite the defensive linemen, I totally agree. And I think it has a lot to do with the philosophy of Marinelli.
That is who I blame.
I will sit there and say, Will McClay goes to the coaching staffs, each individual coaches, and says, what do you need? And they have lists. They have spreadsheet upon spreadsheet of every factor that they look for in each one of these athletes. This guy, I need this kind of speed. You go... And, you know, some coaches are like, I don't need anything else but a guy that runs a 4.2 or a 4.4, has good hands. Give me a guy with those two qualities. And it seems like Marinelli's qualities are, hey, I just need a guy with long arms that can bend. You know, that's all I need is a guy that can do those two things. Taco couldn't bend. He had long arms, though. So uh-huh. They eventually got him. And so I'm wondering if that's the problem that – Marinelli's idea, his philosophy is, I can make anybody a good defensive line.
That is exactly what I think the problem is, because we spent so much time hyping up like how good he was at taking players off the junk pile and making them usable, which right on, like that's a very valuable skill. I'm not here to discount that. But then there were opportunities where like somebody clips coupons or saves money for so long that they don't know what to do when you have the opportunity to go out and spend whatever you want. You know, like when
they become indecisive.
Yes. When you have the potential for the money or you have the potential for the 1st-round pick and he's like, I don't know what to do. I'm good at picking out that 5th-rounder or that guy that got cut and being like, I'll tell you what, I can make a player out of him. Because the thing with Taco is particularly infuriating. Because, like, you could just look at somebody who, I know not exactly the same with the different defensive schemes, but obviously TJ Watt is somebody that you look at. But if you go a little further down, other options that you could have had, Juju Smith-Schuster, Alvin Kamara, Kareem Hunt, James Conner, Tariq Cohen, George Kittle. Like, these are some more than others, like, elite players, and you have somebody who is not even on your team anymore. And this is not hindsight, because I remember we did the draft show at the Pluckers and everybody was like, I hope we get TJ Watt. And no, we went for Taco. So my biggest concern is Rod Marinelli is so stuck in that mindset of I'm going to find a value and make this kid work that when he's given the checkbook, he's like, I don't know what to do.
Is that the case? Is that what it is? Or have we missed out on where the Cowboys think they're going to go cheap at? because you got to go cheap somewhere, right? Have we missed out on the mindset that Marinelli's like, I'll take anybody, give the good draft picks to the defensive backs and linebackers? For the defensive line.
Well, I mean, a couple of years ago, they went with Taco and took the – because they knew they would get the cornerbacks later. I mean, they took Cheeto and them later in the draft. So that was just a bad read.
It was a bad read.
I guess a bad read on the player himself and how they couldn't turn – they couldn't – the desire, the mindset wasn't built in for that guy.
And they used their first pick this year for a defensive lineman who, I know it's only two games, but can't even be active, and it was an overdraft at that. Like, they drafted him too high,
right?
Because they went in and they did the thing that we always talk about, not window dressing your board, but they were like, this is the position that we're going to take, and that is the position that they ended up going to take. Two games doesn't make a career, obviously, but your concern is your second-round pick now can't even get, like, on the sideline dressed out. And that is concerning that the last two top picks you use on defensive linemen, one of them is an unquestioned bust and one of them not off to a great start.
I guess my only thought at that is that I've seen what they've done, but now maybe that's where their mindset is now, is let's just continue to be cheap there, except for the war daddy that they wanted, and not have to worry about paying somebody on the defensive line because they don't have talent there.
Reggie?
Yeah, ultimately, we're talking about possibly the fact that they're not using, but they're using premium picks.
Yeah.
And then this is a premium position. In the game of football, we know that what's important is quarterbacks, guys who get to the quarterbacks, and then you go from there, right? And the fact of the matter is you're using premium picks. Now, to the idea that Rod Marinelli is at fault, maybe that's so. Maybe he is asking for lesser players or whatever. But ultimately, when it comes down to the draft, whose responsibility is it? It's the general manager, is it not? Like, that when it comes down to it, if we look at it and we say, that was a good draft class, who are we putting that? Whose feet are we laying that at?
I'm honestly not laying it at Jerry Jones' feet, because I don't care what anybody says. It cannot be convinced to me that he is the one that calls the majority of the shots.
You don't think he has? I mean, he has executive decision.
I agree with that.
But you think that he's at a point now where he said, all right, I trust y'all.
If he says immediately what jumped into my head.
He got in a fight for Johnny Manziel and lost that fight,
I know,
right?
But at the same time, when Reggie said, you blame the GM, you know whose name popped into my head? Will McClay.
Okay, fine. Let's say the director of personnel, right? Whichever name you would like to use here, because obviously they've separated these out for the Cowboys. Whoever's in charge there, that's who needs to be in charge of, like, who needs to take the blame for not having as high of a success rate when it comes to defensive linemen. Because ultimately, I don't care if your coach is coming and telling you, give me piss poor talent. That's, like, that reflects on you. And in fact, like, if you want them to win and if they feel like they can win with lesser players, nah, let's just get you this talent, dog. Right? Like, that ultimately needs to be the response. And it doesn't seem like that's been the case.
Attitude reflect leadership, right?
Yeah. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, we're getting down to the end of Globe Life Park. So we asked the question, who is your greatest Ranger to ever play at the Globe? Ever! Do it next right here on The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This segment of the KNC Masterpiece is brought to you by Mesquite Mitsubishi. You can get a new Mirage for $11,900 only at Mesquite Mitsubishi. Check them out online at mymitsu.com.
Saw a video from the Rangers Twitter account today, and it was a video of, it starts out as Ron Washington, and he's got his hands on Derek Holland's shoulders right there at the foot step of the dugout, and he's giving him the speech. And we've heard what that speech was from Derek personally. He said he can't say it like over air, but we've heard that whenever he comes up for Peace-a-thon. And he's kind of explained how that went. And it was exactly what you thought it was. You go out there. Basically, you go out there and you whoop everybody. You're the man. You go do this thing right now. He slapped him on the face, sent him out there. Derek Holland goes out there and has an amazing night. and in the middle of the freaking World Series. So good that whenever he walked, whenever Ron Washington came out there to say, hey, your night's over with, he was laughing and smiling because he had had such an awesome night. That's exactly what I wanted out of you, boy. That's exactly what I wanted. And that, for me, may be my favorite moment at Globe Life Park because listen to the crowd. Hear the people. Hear the noise. We haven't heard that stadium that loud since that moment, I believe. And that's one that, so for me, that moment right there is it. And I know the Dallas Morning News has the list, and we went over the entire list of the best Rangers roster that's ever been put together, you know, of all the guys that played at Globe Life Park. And Kevin, you said this a couple of times now on the post game show, because we do extra innings, that this season has been more about the end of Globe Life Park.
Sure.
Than look at this baseball team. And Kevin, you said you wanted next season to be more about look at this baseball team than look at this cool new park that we have.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that we're going to be at that point.
Nope.
But I do want to take a little bit of time to look at the best player that ever donned a uniform for the Rangers in Globe Life Park. Who do you think it was? 877-881-1053.
So I thought this over, and I believe there are only four viable candidates.
What?
Yeah.
Only four? Everybody has their... And you can pick any player.
I believe. Okay, I didn't say you have to believe. You can believe whatever you want to believe. I'm just saying I came up with four viable candidates.
Don't let Kevin tell you how to fan.
I'm not telling you how to fan. I'm literally saying I'm not telling you how to fan. But my decision I came away with is... I think it was Juan Gonzalez, all right? Because I looked over it, and Juan Gonzalez, I took like three-year increments because I was kind of comparing him to A-Rod, because as much as like A-Rod's trash and he was a cheater, like those 3 years he had here were incredible. So I kind of looked at like the best three-year run. And so I decided Juan Gonzalez was the way to go. In a three-year run, he finished ninth for MVP, but that was sandwiched around winning two MVPs and getting the Rangers to their first two playoff appearances. In addition to that, during that run, this is what he averaged 45 home runs, 144 RBIs, a .309 batting average, and an OPS of .980.
Oh, man.
I mean, that was what he did for three consecutive seasons. And, like, those Rangers teams were driven by the offense. Like, right. You didn't watch them go into the playoffs and go, I hope we win this 2-1 game. You're like, if the final score is 10-7, I bet we won that game.
The stadium opened in 96?
94.
94. In 96, he had a 1.011 OPS.
Correct. That was the first year that he won MVP. And the years that I took were 96, 97, 98. That was my kind of like three-year period. Obviously, you can use the entirety. And I could see how some people might dock him for that, because then you're just looking at 94 through 99.
Dude, in 93, he had a 1 OPS, too.
Yeah, and that was before. That was when they were still in the old ballpark. So I feel like maybe some people might kind of trend it more towards Pudge, because you still have 2000, 2001, 2002. Like, you have several more extra years of Pudge. But my guy, best player ever in this ballpark is Juan Gonzalez.
You just said send it towards Pudge. It's Pudge.
That's one of my four, if it helps.
Because he's one of if you think of catcher in baseball and you want to put top three catchers of all time, baseball.
No, I only need one. He's the best catcher of all time. So I get your point.
Well, okay. If say that, cool, because I believe that, but I
do too. Yeah, absolutely.
I save room for somebody that says Johnny Bench or somewhere along that line, somebody of that ilk. But yeah,
Johnny Bench was on a number of championship teams.
Yes,
too. So, and he'll get that
so
credit.
Is Pudge.
But if you are the greatest at your position of all time, you're damn sure the greatest that's ever played at Globe Life Park. Sorry.
I think that's a fair argument. I think what
his defense stands out so much.
That is 100% true, because he's like, one thing you cannot argue is the best defensive catcher of all time. Like, if you want to shout out offensively, bench or Piazza for the best like offensive catcher, but nobody can argue that Pudge is the best defensive catcher of all time. And if you argue it, you're wrong. The thing about Pudge that I think I could see giving him an advantage over Juan Gonzalez is more longevity with the franchise and more longevity in the game. I'm just talking like just the most remarkable run that you could see. I remember when there was a time where Juan Gonzalez was the most terrifying hitter in Major League Baseball. And so that's why I gave him the nod. But I think Pudge is certainly a viable candidate.
And I think a lot of times Juan doesn't get the credit for his outfield.
He's not around.
For his outfield presence. And I think that too,
yeah.
Not being part of the Rangers. But in the outfield, Juan had a cannon.
Yeah.
You know, that was one thing we always gave to Pudge, was that you're not running on Pudge. But you didn't want to run on Juan either. He was a horse whenever he was tracking down a baseball.
Uh-huh.
But once he got it in his hand, now you're going to try and go from second to third on him? You better not. And that was one of the other things that I don't think he ever got quite enough credit for, because he was such a dominating hitter. Now, Kevin, I've seen a name pop up a number of times.
He is in one of my four.
No, he's not. I bet he's not. I've seen Nelson Cruz's name pop up a number of times. And here's what I want to point out. While I love Nelson Cruz, I loved watching him play, especially because he was one of the reasons, he was the reason you beat the Detroit Tigers.
Sure.
His era in Texas was not as dominant as his era has been since he left Texas.
I wonder why that is.
He never got to 40 home runs. Hell, he never got over 33 home runs with Texas. But he has been 40, 44, 43, 39, 37, 37.
Hold on, right after you tested positive for steroids?
Yeah, because you don't do steroids after you test positive for them, Kevin.
That's weird.
Right.
Yeah, but you do them when you play here.
Or
at least that used to be the way it went.
So like Nelson Cruz, as great as I thought he was, and as I'll give him that section of playoff baseball, not World Series baseball, but playoff baseball that was awesome. Especially when it came to hitting fastballs or sliders. He was great at it. But he has been more dominant elsewhere than he was as a Texas Ranger.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, like, we're not talking about your favorite Ranger, the best Ranger. And so, like, I think there are two more logical candidates on the board.
To play at Globe Life Park.
So, like, the idea of Adrian Beltre, I think, is silly. Like, he's not in the four. Like, his whole career, sure, he's going in the Hall of Fame. But he does not stand anywhere near the output of Juan or Pudge or these other two people. It's not even close.
If he had been on a team with Juan and Pudge, would we have known about Adrian Beltre that much?
Nope.
Because those two guys would have stood out so much.
He would have been the defensive standout.
He would have been Palmeiro. You know, and Palmeiro was good.
But he wasn't.
But Juan and Pudge were on another level.
Exactly. Exactly.
Hold on, Colby, did you say yeah?
Yes.
That Beltre would have stood out?
Beltre would have stood out. Just his mannerisms and everything else. Are you watching the game? Because Beltre would make everything fun. Of course he would stand out. You don't need stats to do that. Just messing with whoever's playing shortstop. Royce Clayton would have just all kinds of fits trying to catch a pop-up. Because Beltre would be messing with him. Yes, the down on one knee home run. Yes, all those things would stand out. They would still stand out.
Doesn't make you the best, though. So we have two more that I've seen on the fan text time and again that aren't Nelson Cruz. And I think both of these are viable.
Josh Hamilton?
People say Josh Hamilton more cheerfully. And then the other one that they say, and I saw at least two people say, I hate to say it, but probably A-Rod.
That's the one.
So
that's yours, Reggie?
Yeah, man.
I decided to crunch these numbers just a little bit, and I put A-Rod head-to-head with Josh Hamilton. So what I did was I took the three best years of Josh Hamilton in Texas versus the only 3 years of A-Rod in Texas, all right? Hamilton, 107 home runs. These are his three best years. They're not consecutive. A-Rod, 156. Josh Hamilton, 358 RBIs. A-Rod, 395. Hamilton's batting average, advantage him, 316. A-Rod, 305. OPS, Hamilton, 958. A-Rod, 1.010.
And that was with a team that wasn't good.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, A-Rod was, he was the diamond surrounded by trash, essentially. The way Emmitt Smith said that. He wanted out because this team was never going to be able to be the Yankees.
And the 3 years he was here, MVP finishes 6-2-1. Although Josh Hamilton's three best years are pretty close to that, 7-5-1. So those were the four that, like, I thought probably stood out the most for, like, just most greatness you saw in front of you.
Somebody did say that their favorite moment ever at Globe Life Park was the time that the Blue Dot won the race because they were rooting so hard for the Blue Dot.
Then they found out that you could probably use that coupon regardless of who. Like, I want somebody to test that out. We're all sure that you could just use that coupon, right?
Nobody's quit. Hey, hold on. Was this the 9-12 game?
Yeah, like they pull out this big book and they flip through it and they're like, okay, just a minute here. It says by my sheet that the green dot won. You're giving me a blue dot. I'm like, really? Do you care more about your job than anyone who's ever lived?
No, I will tell you this. A-Rod doesn't count because he's A-Rod. He's a jackass.
He is, and a cheater.
Yes.
And
doesn't count.
Somebody said, how's it not Nolan Ryan? Nolan Ryan never played in the ballpark.
Here is, Kevin, here is the top 10 war position players for the Rangers in order. Number one, Pudge Rodriguez, 50.1.
Sure. Ooh.
Palmeiro at 44.6 at number two. Beltre at 43.2 in third. Now, Buddy Bell and Buddy Bell's not doesn't count because he's not there. Kinsler at 35. Juan Gonzalez at 31.9.
Really?
Elvis at 31.2. So those are war position players. Now, that's cumulative over their careers, correct? Yeah. So,
or not just for their time with the Rangers. Juan seems strikingly low.
For him to for his entire career?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what somebody just tweeted it to me. This is from @44DMJ. He just tweeted it over to me, and that's the war position players. And it looks like it's from Baseball Reference. So, man, the thing is, we've had some amazing memories at Globe Life Park so far. This year has not been it.
Yeah.
And that's sad. You got to re-remember it all. I hope that in the new park, the guys like Joey Gallo, the guys like Guzman, the future, the Garrett Coles, I hope we can look back and say, now that's the way you started off a new stadium.
That might be a fun segment for tomorrow or next week. If you have to pick one right now, who's the guy that's going to be that guy in this discussion 20 years from now?
I don't think he's on this team.
Oh, my God. I was afraid you might say that. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. God, I hate that you said that, and I think you might be right. Coming up next, it's time for Gridiron Gravy. Who's ready for a good old-fashioned mustache competition? Next right here on The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.